Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
Today, I'm also very excited to bring back up my friend, Kristen Birchenall. She's one of my favorite speakers because Kristen is very thoughtful and thinks about what she's going to say. And unlike me, I have to apologize all the time. Okay, so welcome, Kristen.
Thank you. Well, hello. I am so glad to be here. Normally I say that, but this week I really mean it. And I'm going to start out with a story that has nothing to do with my message today, but just because I want you to know what my week was like. So Thursdays are my day when I'm speaking. I have childcare to like really dial in and figure out, make sure I'm good with what I'm going to talk about on Sunday. And on Wednesday night at like 9 p.m., I was like, ooh, I don't feel very good. And then I proceeded to throw up every hour throughout the entire night, so I didn't sleep on Wednesday night. And then at 9 a.m., my three-year-old was like, Mom, my belly hurts. And then projectile vomited all over our kitchen. And so I had to call the sitter and be like, sorry, you shouldn't come here. So I got to teach my son how to like hold the toilet bowl. And I got to like, we got to pick out a bowl from the Tupperware thing that he could carry around with him, teach him like, when you feel that feeling, grab it, here's what you do. Some of those things that you just don't even remember, like you have to teach someone how to do that, right? And so we had kind of gotten through the hardest stage, and later on in the afternoon, he hadn't thrown up in a little while, and so I was like, let's watch a show together. So we got into my bed, and I wanted to show you this picture. He was like cuddling up to me. Granted, I hadn't slept. I was feeling yucky. I hadn't slept the night before, but he was sleeping with me, sitting there. And literally out of nowhere, nothing, just vomit all over me. He was laying like that all over me, my shirt, my bed, my pillows, him, everything. I know. And then later, he threw up again on the floor, and my husband was like trying to clean it up, and he gagged and ran away and threw up and was like, I can't clean it up. I can't do it. And so I was like, if you get sick, if our daughter gets sick, what are we going to do? So I just wanted to say, I'm really glad to be here because being here means my family is not sick and I'm not home cleaning up puke. So this is a fantastic option. So that was my week. We are in this series called Humanifesto, talking about how what Jesus said can make us more human. And we've been talking about the Beatitudes, which are the statements he makes at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. And I'm going to read you today, right now, the one that I get to talk about. So here we go. Let's jump in. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So this is the last in a kind of line of these Beatitudes, these blessings of Jesus. And if you look up in any concordance, any, just Google it online, the Greek word for blessed, it will translate to the word happy. That's just what it will say, happy. And as I was getting ready for this, I was like, that's just not true. Those who mourn are literally not happy. And so I remembered back to the pastor of the church that I went to when I was in college and after college. So this is like 15, 20 years ago. I remember him doing a series on this. And he talked about how the word blessed can also be translated not just an emotion of happy, but fortunate position. And then he said, we're going to talk about it, and it's going to mean on the right road. on the right road are you when you encounter these things? And that has stuck with me for this long and helped me as I started to prepare for this. And I hope it's helpful for you as you think through the things that we've talked about. On the right road are those who are poor in spirit. On the right road are those who mourn, those who are meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, those who are merciful, the pure in heart. And today, on the right road are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. Matthew writes about another road, or I would say this same road, in chapter 7 when he says, "But small is the gate and narrow the road that lead to life, and only a few find it." I think the Beatitudes are a statement of preparation for those who want to live in this way, the way of love. It was Jesus, it was his first big sermon to those who were following him, to a crowd. I think it was time for him to inspire, but also time for him to warn. Beatitudes are not things to strive for necessarily. They are things you will encounter if you choose to live in this way of love, if you're on that narrow road. And let me clarify for the sake of this message, because we all come from different backgrounds. But when I say narrow road, there's a different kind of context that some people can have for that. I am not referring to a narrow path where you have to say these specific right words that get you to the gate, that get you into heaven. I'm not talking that kind of narrow road. I'm saying narrow in the way that living in the way of unconditional love gets harder and harder the further you go. Few people stay on it because it requires so much. It will require mercy because we will quickly recognize that we're not capable of unconditional love all the time. And so then you can't help but be merciful to other people because you know they're the same as you. When you truly see people for who they are, when you don't have any expectation of them being different, you will experience a purity of heart, which will refresh you, but also, I think, sadden you a bit because you see things for how they really are. It will drive you down to the bare minimum until you are struck with poverty of spirit. You will feel like you can't do any more, and what you've already done might not ever be enough. You will mourn because mourning is the most natural consequence of deep love, as unfortunate of a truth as that is, if you ask me. And once you love the way that Jesus demonstrates, you will hunger and thirst for righteousness because you believe that every person on this planet deserves it, but it's a hunger and a thirst because we just can't quite get there. And there are times when love will require you to stand down and demonstrate the power that comes with meekness when you feel very differently inside. If you truly love without condition, you will become a peacemaker in that you are committed to shalom, to true wholeness, and the incredibly hard work it takes to get there. And as we're going to talk about today, if you love in the way of Jesus, if you take a stand for love, you will be persecuted. You will bump up against systems and powers and people who do not pursue it. You guys, this list of blessings, I might be the only one. It doesn't really seem like blessings to me. That's why I don't think the word happy or the translation of like, oh, you're blessed, you're going to feel blessed, makes very much sense. Every one of these is hard and a little bit unfortunate in a way, if we're really being honest. That's why I like thinking about fortunate position or on the right road in my mind when I think about this. So as we finish out this part of the series, the Beatitudes, you may not feel blessed, but you can feel like you are in the right place. So, persecution today. I'm going to start out with a disclaimer that I don't necessarily feel like this room needs to hear, but you never know who's watching online, so I'm going to say it anyway. What this does not say is blessed are those who are persecuted, period. If you are persecuted for who you are, that is not a blessing. It says, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. When you are persecuted because of your skin, your gender, your religion, your class, your background, who you love, where you grew up, all the things that make you who you are, this is not for you. This is not saying, oh, you're blessed. When people are shot to death in a synagogue, there's no saying, well, they are blessed for their persecution. You are on the right road when you are persecuted because of righteousness. So what is righteousness? Righteousness being divine approval. What is deemed right by God, I would say what is universally right, what is right by what we think of when we think of wholeness, what is deemed right by love. So the first thing I want to say about this is that my opinion, and we only talk opinions here, by the way, is that this beatitude was intended to inspire and warn those closest to Jesus, to let them know that they would probably experience harsh reactions, violent even, if they chose to stand up to the Roman government for the way. This way, this new way of being in the world where God and love are synonymous. And I think he was giving them a warning. And I hope that when he was crucified, that they maybe just remembered this for a moment. And that there might have been a little bit of comfort that, like, he knew what he was doing. I do think Jesus and Matthew, who wrote this, were talking about violent persecution in their specific time. So I can be inspired simply by that Jesus chose to live the way he did anyway, knowing that persecution would come. And that his disciples lived that way too. It's inspiring to me that he was willing to stand up to Roman soldiers, to Pontius Pilate, to Caesar himself, to the Pharisees, for him to say, lepers can and should be touched. I don't think God is coming for your enemies. Turn the other cheek. Let you who have no sin be the first to cast a stone. Those were all going to cause trouble. And he knew it, and he did it anyway. And his disciples lived the same way. And I think that's inspiring. It had to be inspiring to Peter when he went to the Jewish council and said, I think the Gentiles should be in. And to Paul when he wrote, there is neither male nor female, Jew nor Greek, slave nor free. Those were major, major steps forward towards freedom for people who desperately needed to be set free. And I'm inspired that they did it anyway, knowing what would come. And I hope they knew and felt deeply like they were on the right road. Because as free people today, we are indebted to anyone who has fought for freedom along the way. However, if we want to get beyond like, wow, that was neat, or that was great for them, we have to ask whether it does translate to our time, and if so, how? Are we to expect violent persecution? Is that how we know that we're on the right road? There are many examples still today and in recent history of people who are being violently persecuted for their commitment to living in a way that is loving towards all of humankind. Historical figures who we easily recall as being persecuted for their commitment to this way of living. I emailed the staff last week and asked them to respond as quick as they could with names of people who they think, who come to mind when I say those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. And most of the responses I got were Martin Luther King Jr. and other civil rights heroes, Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, I did get a few Jesuses, which is good, Anne Frank, Susan B. Anthony. There were a few that I didn't even know, which I was thrilled by. But mostly they were big names. They were heroes. And it can feel like this beatitude is only for the heroes. It can feel like we are actually not on the right road, especially because in general, meaning like this room actually, are not a highly persecuted bunch. There are exceptions to that for sure, so please hear me say that. But in general, our area, our community, is not one of violent persecution. I grew up in Bellevue and went to Bellevue High School, I'm telling you. This is in Kirkland. We're not on the forefront of violent persecution. Of course, there still is some going on today, maybe even in the areas where people are watching online or the history that you have yourself. But as I put this message together, I had to ask myself what a white girl from Bellevue is supposed to think about this, because that's the only brain I have. So, for the majority of us, are we just out of luck on this one? I mean, the other ones are pretty terrible, so maybe we could just stop with those and encounter those for a little while longer. Do we need to travel to other parts of the world? Does it not apply at all? To be honest, I'm not quite sure. I think maybe is the answer to all of those questions. Like I said, I think it was pretty clear who Jesus was talking to and who Matthew was writing to. I don't think they were writing to 1998 BHS grad Kristen. But I think we're allowed and we should attempt to convey some sort of meaning for ourselves, some sort of inspiration for today, because it was inspiring. Eugene Peterson wrote he actually passed away recently, but he wrote a translation of the Bible called The Message. And I wanted to read you his interpretation of this passage. "You are blessed when your commitment to God provokes persecution. The persecution drives you even deeper into God's kingdom. Not only that, count yourselves blessed every time people put you down or throw you out or speak lies about you to discredit me. What it means is that the truth is too close for comfort and they are uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens. Give a cheer even, for though they don't like it, I do. And all heaven applauds. And know that you are in good company. My prophets and witnesses have always gotten into this kind of trouble." Okay, so listen to this. The Greek word for persecution, I'm not even gonna try to say it. I even tried to look it up with a little microphone when you can like press it and have it say it to you, and I was like, nope, I'm not even gonna try, But listen to what it means when you look at the translations when you're like researching Greek. It says, to put to flight, to pursue, to prosecute so as to make you want to flee. It means to follow or press hard after. Literally, to pursue as one does a fleeing enemy. So, you're blessed or you're on the right road when your commitment to love provokes the kind of response that makes you want to run away. When people respond harshly or lash out at you personally, when people put you down, throw you out, or speak lies about you because of choices you've made, stances you have taken, things you have done for the sake of love. Anyone else seen how this can be true for us? When you think of persecuted, when have you been shunned or shamed or mocked? When you stand up for love, and when I'm saying love, I'm saying what is right and good and loving for humankind, you will most likely at some point be misunderstood, mistreated, reacted to, sometimes violently. At some point, you will want to run away. But take heart, because apparently you're on the right road. Because what does it mean? Like it says, it means that the truth is too close for comfort and they are uncomfortable.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Eastlake Podcast. This is Ryan with a quick interruption. We'll jump back into the message in just a second. Once again, just wanted to say thank you to so many of you who are continuing to contribute. Many of you who don't even live anywhere physically near us. There's no geography that unites us. What unites us is this growing awareness that life is a gift and love is the point. And this crazy dream of cultivating a community that doesn't center around theological or supernatural agreement, but instead says, ultimately, a community of people who journey towards becoming love,
that could actually make a difference in the world. So thanks for being a part of that. Thanks for contributing. If you haven't yet, but you find these messages helpful to your life, consider making a donation. Just hop onto our website, eastlakecc.com, and you can make a one-time or an ongoing donation there. So thanks for considering that. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Let's jump back in with the message.
Ryan recalled Stan Mitchell saying to us in 2015, "The world needs pastors to comfort the afflicted and prophets to afflict the comfortable." Being uncomfortable is good. None of us, I know this for a fact, none of us have changed without feeling that way, because why would you? Why would you change if you're feeling comfortable? It's the feelings of uncomfortableness that are good. They propel us forward. And if you believe that God is love and love is God, then you are on the side of truth that makes certain people uncomfortable. God is love. The divine in you is the same divine that's in me. We are more alike than we are different. What I deserve, you deserve, they deserve. The ground of all being unites. It doesn't differentiate where I end and you begin. And so the only option is love, or else I have to hate myself. This is an uncomfortable truth. If you take a stance for this kind of God view, this kind of love, you will bump up against people who don't feel that way. Powers, systems, and people who are uncomfortable because this truth will cost them. Unconditional love means sacrifice, and speaking that truth to power does not usually go well because power doesn't want to sacrifice. It doesn't go well for you in terms of typical wellness. That kind of truth will get a harsh reaction. And if I may be so biblical, I would say that this is the take up your cross beatitude. There's a reason why people abandoned Jesus those last few days. This final beatitude pretty much sucks. People don't abandon the way of Jesus because they encounter mercy or mourning or a hunger for righteousness. People abandon the way of Jesus because it threatens their well-being. It threatens their relationships. A wide, easy road is enticing when the other one requires you to carry a cross. But the wide, easy road is detached from humanity. And that's what this series has been about. How can this make us more human? There's room for you not to care on a wide road. On the narrow road, you're going to bump into other humans. You're going to see the pain of the world and the pain of the person next to you. The reason this Jesus thing is still a thing after all this time is because at the very baseline, what he was saying is that the world is not as it should be. It wasn't then, it isn't now. I know that to be true. We haven't achieved this kingdom of heaven yet where the will of love is done here on earth. And the Jesus path says that to get there, we're going to need people who are willing to die along the way. Die to yourself. Die to the status quo. Die to your reputation. Kill your power. Fun stuff, right? Oh, guys, if I'm honest with you, I struggled with this message. And I couldn't figure out why I was struggling. I have said this when I get up here before. I'm usually always writing this at the library by my house because you can't do anything else there. You have to do what you came to do. There's nothing else to distract yourself with. So I was sitting there and I was like, why is this not coming to me? Like, usually I have a breakthrough moment of like, okay, yeah, this is the direction I want to go. And I was like, why is this not, I can't figure out how to go on this. And I think I struggled mostly because I find myself not really in trouble for this kind of stuff. If I'm honest, I easily prefer to stop at being a peacemaker, although after Kyle's message last week, I would say peacekeeper. Being a peacekeeper is much more comfortable for me, fits better with my personality. But I can ride the wave of East Lake's inclusion, our 2015 when we made a statement of inclusion for LGBTQ+. I realized I can ride the wave of that for only so long. before I recognize that I personally don't want to cause trouble. That I need the safety of a group. And that's hard for me to admit. That I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to challenge my friends and family in the stances they have that are unloving. I would prefer that they just see my example and hope for the best. And so I sit here today confessing that I don't think I do this very well. I think maybe I'm stumbling on this part of the narrow road, or maybe just proceeding with caution. I don't know. Or perhaps buying into this misconception that this one belongs to the heroic, and I don't really want to be a hero. I found myself not really knowing what to do, sitting at that Seattle Public Library, which is so inspiring, right? I'm so inspiring for you guys right now. But so the key for me in figuring out how to move forward, once I realize that, once I acknowledge that, how I can be inspired towards action with this is trying to recognize where and how I can even take a stand for love. What does that look like? To stand for what is right, good, and loving for humankind, and then not wanting to flee when I get a response. So, I set two goals for myself, and I'm going to share them with you. I can't tell you how I'm doing because I only did this last week. But I hope that they are helpful for you. As always, I hope you take this with a critical mind. I hope you take what I'm saying and evaluate it for yourself, acknowledging that we all have different paths and what we're trying to get to is being a beneficial presence in the world. So I'm going to share with you what I came up with for me. So the first thing is this. Acknowledge where I have power and do my best to flip it. Acknowledge where I have power and do my best to flip it. So what do I mean by this? Jesus, his whole way of being in the world, the reason he was persecuted was an active undermining of the power systems of the time. Power systems oppress. And as a Jewish rabbi, his undermining of the religious system of the day was one of the most incredible stances I've ever read. And I think what we miss a lot of times is recognizing our own power. So many of us feel powerless, like the systems are too big. We don't recognize our ability to participate in helping to break the things that aren't right so that they can be healed and restored. My challenge here, and maybe yours too, is to not get caught up in where we haven't been given enough. Our own gender, our own race, our own identity. But to notice the other humans who are walking along the way with us and are fighting their own battle. And to give what we have away. When we take our eyes off of ourselves, we can see the bigger picture and see that we do have power. And when I say that, I recognize that I'm saying that as a privileged person. So I say that purposefully and carefully because I know when I'm talking about giving power away, it feels like, well, that I'm a privileged person to even have that thing to say. So I recognize that. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think a mistake can be made when we're only looking at our own battles. The uphill battle that we are facing, me and my group. It's easier to focus on where we have been wronged than where we might be a part of the problem. As a woman in the church world, I could easily focus on the misogyny, the problem that has existed for centuries, but I can't undermine that system because it doesn't belong to me. That's the problem in the first place. I can be part of the process. Sure, and I think I might be. But the undermining has to come from those who actually have the power. And if I can be so bold, I will say men, and in particular white men, need to give away their power in the church. I've been watching Glennon Doyle. I'm not sure if you know who she is, but she has been attempting recently to give away her power as a white woman to women of color. It has not gone smoothly, and she has made some mistakes. She's acknowledged that, but she's committed to love, and so she's trying, and I appreciate that. So what I'm asking you to consider is what systems actually belong to you. Where are you on the top? And I know we can think big things like race and gender and identity and things like that, but even I just ask you to consider the situations in your everyday life where you are a person of power. If you're an adult, you are in a system of power over children. So when you interact with children, what are you going to do with that? Are you going to be powerful, or are you going to give it away? When you are a patron of a restaurant, you are in a position of power. Someone is serving you. So what are you going to do with that? I know that those are like, I'm just trying to get you to think through that we all have some sort of power in some way. And the system of undermining requires us to get in the habit of giving it away. What will I do with my power? Will I use it for me to get what I need and what I want, or will I use it for the common good? Even if that means I might lose opportunity or resources or privilege. Will I notice individuals along the path and do what I can, even if it causes a reaction? Like Jesus did. I think what I like about the Jesus story is that they're stories of just small interactions that created a big story. And I think that's a misconception about heroes, is a lot of time when we remember back, we remember heroes for the grand story that sometimes and usually started with small interactions. Now, there's something to be said for fighting for yourself. Do that. Hear me say, do that. You should fight for yourself. But I think you'll even be able to fight for yourself more effectively if you understand what you're asking other people to do. If you sacrifice first, you can understand what you're asking other people to sacrifice. And you know, I think power transfers better when it's given away rather than taken. I don't think that's how it usually happens, but I think that's the Jesus way. It's the subversive way to do it. True love means we're willing to sacrifice. And so before you demand that other people do it, have you done it yourself? That's the first thing. And the second thing, when I take a stand for love, I will figure out how to do it lovingly. This one is important to me. You are free to disagree. But it's one of the reasons why I think I fear speaking up and speaking out sometimes, because a lot, and I would say even most people who do this, are just kind of jerks about it. Really, they are. And then love becomes confusing. Your commitment to love, I think, means nothing if you are an asshole about it. I'm just gonna say it. I think I can waste some opportunities that I have because I can easily come across bratty, with my opinions. And that matters. It matters. No one will see you fighting for love if you're just a fighter, if you're combative. So for me, my promise is to continue to be thoughtful to the point of burdensome in my soul as to how I go about this. I will ask questions instead of make statements. I will listen. I will try to learn. Let's try to learn. Why? Why are people feeling persecuted? Why are they being shunned? Why are they angry? Because anger is not a bad thing. So let's try to learn and listen and seek truth and thoughtfully consider why people feel differently than me about things. And then when I demonstrate strength, I will still be kind. We can be audacious, we can be brave, and we should be. Thoughtfulness is not an excuse for not acting, and love is not passive. But I can be kind. Again, undermining what people expect. I know this is a community of people who are willing to rise to those challenges as well. Recognize where you can take a stand for love. Acknowledge where you have power and how it might be benefiting you rather than the common good. And when you take a stand for love, do it lovingly. After all, like Paul says, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels but do not have love, I am a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If we can sacrifice our own power and find moving, loving ways to stand for what is good and still experience persecution or harsh reactions against us, we will know we're on the right road. We can welcome people who are harsh. We can welcome the challenge that we're not doing it the right way. We can stand fearless in the face of pushback because we've already done the work and we've given up the need to win. We know what love looks like, and we know it's worth fighting for, no matter the response. So when you do get a response, when a response feels like an attack and makes you feel like you want to run away, don't. Love is asking you to stay. And what is beautiful about standing your ground is where you find yourself. And that's where this beatitude leaves us, telling us to rejoice and be glad even because you find yourself in good company. You will find yourself deeper in the world where love reigns. And honestly, those are the people you want to be with anyway, right? Rocking the boat ends up being okay because when you fall out, you escape those who are trying to keep the status quo and you can swim with the free. You realize not only are you on the right road, but you're surrounded by good company, other people who are doing the same thing, who are working towards the same goal, and a history of people who have done the same thing and gotten into the same kind of trouble. So please, figure out where trouble needs to be made, where what is good and right and loving for humankind is not happening, and ask yourself, what does love look like here? Do it in a way that surprises people, that makes them think, that makes them uncomfortable. Uncomfortable is good. Expect a response and do it anyway. Because here's the most, if you hear anything, this is what I want you to hear as we wrap up. If you expect a response, you can accept the response. If you expect a response, you can accept the response. Accepting persecution rather than fighting back is the truest act of love. The standing for something matters. The looking for love matters. The giving away your power, it matters. But how we respond to persecution that comes our way when we do those things, that just might matter the most. Jesus told his followers to accept it, and then he showed them what that looked like. So know that you're in the right place, and instead of spending time defending ourselves or vindicating ourselves from partial truths or any of those things, inaccurate attacks, the true sage absorbs the hate, transmutes it, and gives love in its place. I think that is what it means when he wrote that the persecution drives you deeper into the kingdom. There are deeper love opportunities if you're on the road that results in persecution. If you can take in that hatred and return love, you are undermining the system of hate, which is what we're trying to dismantle at all levels in the first place. If you can love the prosecutor, the persecutor, same thing. Rather than fight them, you undermine. You make progress. You become love. And let me tell you, it's harder and harder to fight that. So, as we wrap up, would you stand with me? As we go out, would we be people who cause the right kind of trouble? Do it. Cause the right kind of trouble. Absorb the hate that comes your way and return love. Amen. Thank you for being here.